And the other plan was also to design some things that would actually add content that where you could actually sell accessories that would be profitable rather than and make them available. Yeah. You know, right off the bat, the racing people said, "We don't need that goddamn wing spoiler. It'll just fall off on the racetrack and kill somebody." This was guys like, you know, a fellow named John Cowley that worked in the performance group, and I'm sure his boss Passano felt the same way. And then I
Jack Passano.
So I said, "Look, you need more downforce in the rear. You need more downforce in the front. So sure. I've designed you this front air dam that's going to give you more downforce in the front, and you're going to need it in the rear." And so we actually built enough of them, and then it was homologated. And the dumb bastards wouldn't run it.
Why not?
In the Trans Am.
Why not?
And so then here the Z28s have a great big rear spoiler on it. They say, "Well, that's slowing them down. That's drag." I says, "You don't understand. It's downforce."
It's strange that Passano wouldn't know this after all the Le Mans and all that stuff.
You know, they didn't understand it. Yeah. In fact, they didn't even understand how they won Le Mans, I don't believe.
Really?
And the Chaparral was still a mystery to them.
Really?
And they're saying, "Well, the Chaparral's got all that horsepower. That's why it goes so fast." And I had to show them, I had all the test data.
Uh-huh.
Here's the horsepower it had, and it has 430 horsepower, and yet it beats your GT40s that have 500 horsepower.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the Chaparral.
Yeah.
Right.
And I said, the top speed of the car is 151. And your car's top speed's at 208, but the Chaparral goes around the track faster than your car's. Because it runs 151 almost all the way around the racetrack, and you have to slow down for the corners. And it's vehicle dynamics. And a lot of it's downforce. It's high end drag, that's why it only runs 151, but it's downforce. And if they could trim it, well, it'd run faster. But in those days, I guess they weren't allowed to have the movable planes.
Apparently, yeah. Right, yeah.
So, but, you know, there are things such as that, and of course everybody else, in 1970, they finally got the message and they won the Trans Am. But, of course, they didn't have the same competition. They were racing Penske running a dog.
Which one?
So he was running an AMX at that time.
Oh,
so
yeah, right, I remember.
He's trying to race, you know, he's trying to race you with, you know, carrying the bathtub. You know?
But, so the 302 cleaned up that year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won almost everything.
Did it?
But
you were vindicated.
Yeah, I was vindicated, but I was no longer there.
Oh, I thought you were still there in 70.
No, I got fired in 69. So
what did you? They have a spoiler on too.
Oh yeah, they ran the rear spoiler, angled all the way up, getting the max downforce.
And of course the front dam.
Front dam, right.
It was all your design and all your specifications.
Right. So they finally, Well, at least I was vindicated that I was right.
Certainly were. Was that your greatest triumph, you think, the Boss 302?
No, not really.
What others are you proud of? Tenure. A rather brief, but a very spectacular tenure at Ford.
Yeah, I guess, that would probably, then there was, of course, there was a car that was done in competition with the Pantera.
Oh, yes. And tell us about that. It's quite an interesting episode, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a car that was done.
How'd it come about?
Well, Knutson says, what do you think of this? What do you think of this Di Tommaso guy? And I says,
yeah.
So I wouldn't trust him as far as you could throw him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
apparently shared by a lot of people.
Yeah, and you know, he and Iacocca were very close friends,
yes.
And they had already you know, made the pack, and so no matter what happened, no matter how good the car that I did, mm-hmm. Was not going to happen.
So. Yeah. So tell us about it.
And it was called a Mach 2C,
mm-hmm.
And it was actually was going to be built here in the U.S. and they were planning on building it at Brighton where we ended up building Discoverers. That's the plant that built the Boss 429.
Brighton,
Michigan.
Oh, really?
And
what plant is that?
Well, it was at one point in time it had been an old trailer plant, and then Carcraft bought the plant and they built the Boss 429 in that plant.
Okay. So Carcraft did it for you. Yeah.
Well, Carcraft, they just had that plant. Well, then the car was all done in-house in the design center.
Okay.
Did the clay model made up of fiberglass, mm-hmm. sort of a seating buck. We built the seating buck and then put all the fiberglass skins on it.
Mm-hmm.
had a mock-up engine set in it, and it looked very realistic. Uh-huh. And the car was slated to sell for under $9,000. And it would have had, initially was designed for a 351 engine. Uh-huh. And then Knudsen forced the issue to a 429. Uh-huh. And that kind of made the thing really become a fiasco. But it,
really?
But it had to have all kinds of front air intakes for the radiator. So it got, it still was a nice looking car, but it would have been much better with a 351. So the chassis was designed, the transmission was all designed. And we're getting ready to do some production tooling for the fiberglass for the body.
Yeah.
And that's when it all, you know, kind of went away.
Because the Pantera was a fait accompli and had no inside on
it. Yeah.
What was your feeling about the Pantera? You obviously thought it was inferior to the one that you were.
Yeah, it was really a junk car.
It really didn't. It never went anywhere.
No, it was a bad, ill-designed, bad car. But, you know, from a styling standpoint, it had terrible blind spots towards the rear.
Mm-hmm.
And it was uncomfortable. A human really couldn't sit in it properly.
Really? Yeah.
Well, any car that Di Tomaso has ever done has been poorly.
Really?
Yeah, it's been a poor package. His Mongusta was designed by Giugiaro, and it copied the Monza GT.
Really?
In several areas. If you look at the side view of the car, mm-hmm. he even copied the three little louvers behind the window. The same window treatment, the louvers he copied. Then in the later model, the Lamborghini Miura, he copied the louvers in the back.
Again?
Yeah. So.
He should have called you and said, Larry, we're gonna steal this from
you. No, well, that's the thing that people, you know, they always refer to him as a great designer, but you know,
he's really just a copyist.
Well. No, I can't really say that, but in this case, he was.
Yeah.
So.
Back to Knudsen. without violating any confidence or putting you in an awkward position, but much has been said about your relationship with him. It obviously was a very friendly, paternal kind of relationship. He obviously respected your judgment and your design capabilities. In your estimation, what were his shortcomings? You mentioned a couple of them, obliquely.
Yeah, he was a very poor judge of people.
Was he? Mm-hmm. Not in your case, of course, but in other
well,
cases.
Well, I'd say probably not in my case, but in a lot of other cases he was. And he, to a point that the fast-talking bullshitter could really snow him.
Really? No, that's unusual.
Yeah.
You'd think it would be just the opposite.
Yeah, you'd think so, but this is the case. He, I'd seen too many of them, you know.
Yeah, right. Now, someone like Bordenay, who was very smooth and very political, he saw through him.
Yeah, he saw through him, but then there were other people that, Pasnell was one that bullshit
him. Completely snowed him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Pasnell, apparently, what you say, didn't really have no sense.
He was a nice guy, a wonderful guy, but, you know, he didn't really have that many smarts when it came to, you know,
actually getting it off the ground.
Right.
Yeah. And yet he apparently came through at Le Mans. How did that happen?
Well, I think basically he had some good people working for him.
Did he? Uh-huh. He was just a figurehead.
And yeah, in fact, you know, I'm sure that's how that all came about. Because he, Knudsen had asked him several times in my presence to find him find me a guy to send to Australia. To straighten out the Australian racing thing.
Oh, really?
And Jack would say, yeah, I've got somebody in mind. And, you know, never came up with it. So finally, the third time that I heard him ask him, I was there and he said, Larry, do you know somebody? I says, yeah. He said, bring him over to my office. Well, case in point again, what's he look like?
What did that mean?
Well, you know, this is Knudsen. You know,
the
tall, good looking.
Oh, I see.
You know.
The stereotype.
And so I said, he says, what's his name? I says, Al Turner. And, you know, he said, what's he look like? And of course, Pastor was just about ready to have a shit hemorrhage because he hates Turner.
Oh, really?
Doesn't like him.
A big rival.
Well, Turner had been working with Hernandez and some other people at Lincoln Mercury.
Oh,
And the Lincoln Mercury guys would normally beat the Ford guys' pants off.
Yeah, they did very well.
Yeah, they did real well with very little. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Pinturno worked for the fellow named Ralph Peters, so it was really just a damn good planner,
mm-hmm.
good man.
Yeah.
And so Bassano didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And Turner had virtually no education. He's an old drag racer from Michigan.
Right, yeah.
And so I called Turner and say, guess what? He says, what? I says, I got a job for you. So put on your best suit, you know.
Spruce up,
and I'll come by and pick you up. Yeah. So where we're going is we're going over to the Knutson's office. What the hell you want to go? I say, do you want the job or don't you? So what is the job? I said, well, it's going to take you from a grade 9 to a grade 13.
Can't pass that up.
He says, shit, no way. I said, are you ready? He said, okay, I'm ready. So picked him, he went home, changed, picked him up. I took him over to Newton's office. And they hit it off well.
Great. So what did
he
do?
He went to Australia. They didn't give him the 13, but they gave him a 12.
They gave him a 12.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Well, it's still pretty good. Yeah. And he did a real good job.
Uh-huh.
And Bill Burke really liked him. So when Burke got promoted to Europe, Burke took him to Europe.
Oh, he did.
Uh-huh. And when Burke came back, Burke brought him back. And then, of course, when Burke got blown out, then, you know, Turner got slid off to the side, and then he ended up working for Cranefuss at SVO.
Still there?
Kept always having conflicts.
In the early 80s.
Yeah, and Cranefuss being German and, you know, being pretty hard-headed, wouldn't listen. And Turner being, you know, a hot rodder and, you know, hard-headed also. You know,
right,
They finally, well, then Cranefuss tried to get Turner fired.
You're talking about Cranefuss.
Cranefuss.
Yeah, right.
And unfortunately, Cranefuss had given him two performance reviews.
They were both.
One outstanding and one excellent.
Oh.
And then he's going to try to fire him on incompetency. So Turner hired the same attorney that Bill Burke had.
Uh-huh. Burke got a big settlement.
So did Turner.
Oh, great. Good. And
he's at Chrysler.
Is he really? Yeah. What's he doing there?
He takes care of, he works for Joe Campana, and he's in charge of the prototype vehicles and show cars. And he handles the studio cars that are used in the movies and things.
Might be interesting to talk to him.
Yeah, I think it would be. He's had a...
Some vignettes.
Yeah, and he's... I think he'd be somebody because he's an old drag racer and he's been through the mill.
Sounds like it.
But...
But that was one project that paid off.
Right, and then...
That you asked Knutson to take a long look at, and he did. And
right. But there are other people that Knutson brought in. That there was a fellow named Dick Johnson that was also a nice guy, but boy, he was death on people that at Lincoln Mercury, and he just, you know, he didn't help Knutson's efforts at Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Wheeler didn't really help Knutson's efforts, and
Wheeler stayed on somehow inexplicably all these years. How do you do that?
Well, he's a survivor.
Survivor,
and he'd kiss anybody's ass to be a survivor.
Yeah. Well, you were doing some great stuff, but you were also, as you from your own admission, you were stepping on people's toes.
Yeah. So.
Now, without asking you to to lay bare your personality, how would this happen? Were you impatient, right?
I was impatient, and I knew what needed to be done. And if people just, I'd ask them, and then I'd wait.
Mm-hmm.
I'd ask them again. When I'd ask them the third time and they hadn't moved on it, then I just went right around them.
Yeah, right.
And in some cases, I'd come back and I'd ask them once the next time, and mm-hmm. no reaction, I'd just go around them. And then I'd do whatever I could to get them out of my area.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need people like that, you know. I needed loyal people that would at least back up, you know, what I was doing.
At that point, there was a few pieces of dead wood floating around the designs.
Oh, there's still.
The late 60s. who do you remember with affection? People who helped you, help ease the, your path and thought of something of your abilities, well, of your abilities?
Well, I think William Clay Ford, he always seemed to be, very much a gentleman, and he would stop every now and then and have a cup of coffee and just chat, you know.
See what you were doing.
Yeah, and I'd ask questions.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah.
And then there are other people that, Peterson, in fact, I reported to him.
Did you?
I reported him right up to when I got canned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
He was a head product planner then.
Yeah. Well, in fact, he was executive director of design.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then he left and took Caldwell's place at Truck, I guess.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That was part of his progression.
And, I always got along fairly well with Kopka.
Don Kopka, very nice guy.
Yeah, and there were some people there I didn't really care for. Well, one of them was a guy named Al Mueller who's still there.
Still there, yeah. He's working for Kopka now.
Was he?
Yeah, he's Kopka's right hand.
I never cared for him.
Yeah.
He was one of these. He was also a mean, nasty drunk.
Was he?
Yeah.
He's still pretty strange.
Yeah.
Well, when did the explosion come? Was it pretty much, were you pretty much tied to Knudsen's situation when it happened?
Well, most likely. In fact, my assignment, I went to the Frankfurt show.
Frankfurt Auto Show.
Yeah, you know, and I was
Which
at
was
the Frank...
Big, that was the big one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was at the Frankfurt show, and what's his name? Walter Hayes.
He
looked me up. In fact, he chased me down,
mm-hmm.
and captured me on just before I was just gonna get on the elevator, just coming off the elevator. And he finally traced me down,
mm-hmm.
Got me back in the elevator, took me up to my room, sat me down on the bed, and then he gave me the news.
Which was?
That Knudsen had been fired.
Uh-huh.
That he didn't really know what the situation was, but why didn't I call Bordenay right there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The time was that Bordenay was home, so mm-hmm. I called him at home, and Walter stood there, and Walter, talked to him also,
mm-hmm.
and Bordenay was very calm. He says, "Well, you have nothing to worry about. You're not involved.
Not any danger.
And continue to do the job that you're doing, and go down there to Italy and do it. I had an assignment to go to Italy and do." To look at this Pantera thing, and see if there was a way I could help, take some of the items that I had done on the car that I had done, and adapt them to the Pantera.
You finally realized it was a dog. Huh?
Yeah, well, of course it was one of those things that was kind of hard to do because it's this Tom Jarda who designed the Pantera. Well,
yeah.
I was kind of put in his charge,
mm-hmm.
so we, and then Di Tommaso's personal secretary, she took the room next to mine.
Mm-hmm.
She, it was almost like I was under surveillance. All
yeah,
time I was there.
As if they were bugging you.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
And then, Di Tommaso later made statements that he personally had got Knudsen and myself fired.
Oh, really?
Which is,
ridiculous.
So then somebody started rumors that I was basically highly adept in the martial arts, and I was a black belt in karate and kung fu and things, and I could disembowel him with one thrust. and he should be careful because I might. And they had him. He honestly believes that I am.
Who did?
Di Tommaso.
Oh, did he?
He honestly believes that I'm a karate expert.
Are you?
No.
No.
But he believes it. It's a,
So you and Tom Jarda were trying to cobble together something that would make the Pantera
passable. The second model Pantera, the front bumper, was an outgrowth of the car that I did.
Was it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. but, you know, it's...
What about Tom Charter? What kind of guy was he?
Seems like a real nice guy. In fact, he's the one that told me this story. He's the one that told me this story about DiTomaso and the...
And the surveillance?
Well, the surveillance also about the...
Oh, the karate business.
Well, yeah, that... Well, he started it, I think.
He did, as a
and
joke.
Then, well, no, and, well, I guess, well, he didn't really... He doesn't really care for DiTomaso either.
Oh, I see. Okay.
He worked for him for several years.
Yeah. Right.
And there was a fellow named Pete Coltrane that lived in the Giugiaro's hotel. I mean, DiTomaso's hotel.
Yeah.
And down the road was
what's
a...
What's his name? Coltrane?
Pete Coltrane.
How do you
spell it? C-O-L-T-R-I-N.
Okay.
And he was from Pasadena, California. And I knew him.
Oh, you did?
And he went to Italy with Ack Miller. Back, well, when they took this Ack Miller's hot rod to run the Mille Miglia.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he took this Oldsmobile with him as a chase car.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed in Italy, never came back. And
what was his forte?
He was a writer. He wrote and kind of a part-time mechanic and a freelance writer and an artist.
Uh-huh.
And he stayed there and, liked the life and... And then there was another fellow that lived down the street that had another American, a guy named Tom Neal, that used to take Ferraris and kind of ruin them. He didn't really ruin them. He'd make them into a kind of a cartoon with pipes going all over the place and putting big, tails on them. He was kind of a real free spirit. And they're drinking in the bar at this hotel that DiTomaso owned, and I guess DiTomaso came in the bar and they were kind of talking and my name came up.
Uh-huh.
And Coltrane said, oh, Shinoda, son of a bitch. There's a guy that got hands of steel. He says, and he's telling the story that if I poke my hand through this brick wall of this furnace, it broke the wall. And he said, and the reason he knew was because after I broke a hole in the furnace, I shoved him in the furnace. Well, it wasn't him, it was somebody else, but the brickwork was bad, and I shoved this guy up against the brickwork, and the wall fell in, so I shoved the guy through the hole. But, so it was partially a true story, but he built on it.
He embellished it, yeah.
And this Tom Neal built up some story about me putting a severe dent in this, this car that ran into us. Well, I did kick it, but I didn't, I did put a dent in it, but I didn't put my whole foot through this guy's door. So they had DiTomaso completely worried.
Yeah.
So he shows up at the New York Auto Show, and they're showing the Pantera for the first time. Mm-hmm. And he's got his coat draped over his shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
European style. And
Raymond Lowe, yeah.
So I walk up and I tap him on the shoulder because I want my wife to see this guy with the black pointed teeth. He was having his teeth capped, and they were all black, and they were pointed because they had been ground off.
Oh, yes, sir.
And, that has to be painful.
Oh.
And so I figured, boy, he was still the same way. So I tap him on the shoulder. He jumped right out of his cape, and I'm holding his cape. And he's startled, and then suddenly realizes that he's made a fool of himself, so he smiles. He's got these beautiful white teeth.
Oh, my God.
Perfect.
They've all been capped.
So I put his coat back on for him, and I introduced him to my wife, and he introduces to his female designer, who was a nice looking Italian girl, and then they left.
Uh-huh.
And I never could figure out why he just left in a huff. So we go to a restaurant later, and we sit down, and this is a Four Seasons.
Oh.
And they pull the table out, and they set us down, and we're going through our salad, and I look over and down about four tables down on the other side is DiTomaso, and he sees me. They immediately jump up, and they're right in the middle of their main course. They jump up and leave.
Really? Wow.
And
the story has really gotten to him.
Yeah. So later we see him at. We walk into the plaza, and there's a little, pub,
mm-hmm.
And we're in there having a drink before we go back up to our room and. They're in there sitting across at another table. They jump up and leave again.
Yeah.
So, I guess it must have been working.
You really spooked him.
Of course, I haven't seen him, we haven't crossed paths in quite a
quite well.
But then one of the guys in California, the Gafoglio brothers.
How do you spell that?
G-A-F. O.
G.
O-G-L-I-A.
Right,
Gafoglio. They have a company called Metal Crafters. Mm-hmm. And they do all the prototype work for Chrysler.
Do they?
And they're from Argentina. So, you know, and they're friends of Alejandro Di Tomaso's from Argentina, and they're friends of Iacocca's. And John, who's the father, asked me one day, he says, I'm shaking hands with him. He says, he grabbed my hand with his other hand, and he says, you see, your hand's not hard. I says, no, it's a lot of training.
Yeah.
He looks at me.
You kept the image.
I figured, he says, yeah, he says. And then he didn't ask any more questions, he says.
That's smart.
So how long does it take to train us? Well, to get back in shape, 2-3 months. And, you know, that's all, you know, and he asked these questions. So then about 2 months later, I run into this Tony Carlini. Hank Carlini is Iacocca's right-hand man. You know, he's sort of his stooge, his bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
Tony's his nephew. And Tony kind of has an office at this Metal Crafters, and he has a company called Camera Ready Cars, and he fixes up all the Chrysler products for photo shoots and what have you.
Right.
So, you know, they all have the golden handcuffs.
Right.
He asked me, do you really know that karate? He says, why? So he says, oh, he says that Di Tomaso mentioned that you're lethal.
Well, you obviously come back to Durban, then what happens? Back in Turin.
Yeah, and then I got back on a Friday, late Friday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So I came in, I had written a complete report on the flight back.
Mm-hmm.
And so my secretary was still there, so I asked her to come in Saturday and type it all up.
Right.
And I didn't go back in the studio, and then I went straight home.
Uh-huh.
I came in Monday, and the report was all done, and so I signed it, and she took copies to Bordney's office, and then he came in about 9, mm-hmm. called me in his office, and fired me.
What did he say?
Well, his exact words were, in your own words, Larry, you're a history.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it would mean you were fired. You know.
Uh-huh. But what do you mean in your own words?
Well, that's what I used to always say. Well, you better watch out, you'll become history.
Oh, was it one of your favorite
expressions?
What sort of financial settlement did you get from anything,
though? Not very good. If I'd known what I know today, it would have been damn good.
You would have been. Would you take them?
Yeah, because it was a case in point. Was he had given me 3 performance reviews, and they were all outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
This
has come from the director's son, at least the
vice president, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be they would have really been hard pressed. And then, of course, then I had the NAACP call me up, ask me if I'd like some help.
You should have taken.
American Civil Liberties, also called.
In retrospect, you would have done it a lot differently.
Yeah, if I'd known what I do today, I would have done it a whole lot different.
Yeah.
And, maybe I'd have got blackballed or whatever, but...
it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
It seems to me that was a rather abrupt and somewhat brutal way of handling a fairly superior design.
Yeah, I think that I always felt it was.
You and Mr. Newson are still fairly good friends at this point, and apparently at this point you interest him, or he interests you, in is it a recreation vehicle?
Yeah, we did the Discover Motor Home.
Right.
There's another case where, you know, with, some of the people he brought in after the fact were not all that strong and, you know, been, and over the years proved themselves to be, mm-hmm. you know, pretty much what I had kind of assessed them as.
You formed this firm called RecTrans.
Right, I was one of the people that formed it. There was actually, in the initial formation, there was Knutson, his attorney who handles his less than savory affairs, mm-hmm. a fellow named Jerry Luptak, and Carl Kiekhafer.
Spell that.
Luptak.
And Carl?
Kiekhafer.
What's
that? That was a Kiekhafer, you know, I don't know how it's spelled, K-E-I. K-A-F-F.
E-R.
Right. He was the Mercury Marine founder.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
What's Mercury Marine? What's that?
Well, the Mercury outboards.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah. He was the man behind that.
Yeah.
Founder. And so you and Bunky and
Kiekhafer, we started the thing. Mm-hmm. And then.
Was it incorporated in Michigan or in Ohio?
It was incorporated in Michigan.
Michigan.
And it wasn't incorporated until February of 70.
Yeah.
Well, the company was